Okay, well, I would like to thank Larry Nyssen for this nice little workshop. And I'll try to keep it short so everybody can go home before the big snowstorm, although I'm really looking forward to it personally. All right, so today I'd like to talk about something completely different from what we heard. And this was a fun little project we started. Javier Siemens, my collaborator, came on, to me and Ben when we were at Trias over a bowl of wine, and we're just discussing this fun little system. And then that was last summer, and then we had a paper about this finally in March. And so it's a fun little calculation. It's not an extremely well motivated system in the sense that it's somewhat fine-tuned if you want to get the signal. But the signal is very nice, and it's very different. And it's slightly inspired or motivated by previous work I've done with Mark Wyman here and Vitae a way back. All right, so the basic idea is, I want to discuss cosmic string. And they're generally produced in phase transitions. It's pretty easy to produce them, but often they can be unstable. And I'll explain how. But they're really good defects cosmologically. And the reason is well known is their density tends to scale to the dominant fluid in the universe. So during the radiation era, they behave like they scale like radiation. During the matter era, they scale like matter. So they don't tend to overdominate, to overclose the universe. There's many observational probes. It's a very rich subject. There's many different ways to possibly detect cosmic string. And so they're just of interest on their own. They're just something that could be there. So we just want to see whether we can detect them. But like I already alluded to, they can, in general, be unstable. In other words, you can have phase transition, which really should not be producing cosmic string, but produces them in a sort of transit phase, and then they just decay right away. And so the question where we're asking itself is, if I have an unstable network of strings, I produce these cosmic strings, they're unstable, they decay, can we still observe them somehow? And like I said, it's, in general, I would say it's no, but there's for some somewhat fine-tuned regional parameters, yes, you can, and the signal is very interesting. It's a very interesting gravitational wave signal that LIGO, LISA, or Advanced LIGO can look for. So, right, so just briefly, I want to review how the physics of cosmic string is very different from what we heard all the other talks today, so just basic stuff, and in particular, usually cosmic string, everybody thinks of them as topological defects, so what do I mean by instability for cosmic string? And then, this talk has two parts. One is just a nice little problem calculating gravitational radiation from strings with two endpoints. This is essentially the instability I'll be looking at, so it's a string with two monopoles. And like I alluded here, it's really related to essentially a mass which is uniformly accelerated and then emits gravitational wave in the process. And the uniform acceleration is provided by the cosmic string, whereas a fixed tension. So it's just a nice infamous problem in ENM that now we're going to take in gravitational in GR. And then, so the first problem is this, and the second problem is just, now let's look at a network which then decays, and can we observe, or what's the signature? All right? OK, so I like to say that we already have seen cosmic string. So they occur in phase transition. Here is a picture of a superfluid. And then after some phase transition, we get these topological defects, which I consider to be cosmic, because compared to the size of the atoms, 1 millimeter, these are huge, huge objects. And so this is the kind of things that you can expect to can occur whenever you break a symmetry. Particularly with a U1 symmetry, where the Higgs field will pick up some bev, and they'll have different values at different point in space. And whenever you get some kind of winding, that is, when you get different angles and you get a non-zero winding, then you'll get a topological defect in the center, and that's your cosmic string. So we just imagine that between reheating era to all the way to today's physics, anytime you can break a U1 symmetry, you can produce these objects. And so can we observe them? There are also other defects possible, and it's good to remember about those, because you can always think of the instability of cosmic string in terms of hybrid defects. So that is a cosmic string plus something, either a dominant wall or a monopole. So these are the other two, anyway, that I'll consider today, which generally occur when you break the non-abelian gauge group as a monopole and discrete a group, like for a dominant wall here, where I have just two different vacua, then when the defects will just interpolating between these two different vacua will be a dominant wall, co-dimension one defect. Okay? So these two are usually a problem cosmologically because they don't scale. So they tend to behave like matter or worse. And so they're not as interesting as cosmic string. All right, but custom strings are safe. So again, this is sort of slightly a review. So custom strings are safe because they self-destruct. The idea here is that if you don't have a lot of custom string, then their density grows. But as they grow, they interact more, they intersect, and they produce, they self-destruct, essentially. And so you reach a scaling solution where the density of custom string, instead of going like 1 over a squared, which would be really bad, actually scales like 1 over a cubed in the matter error, or 1 over a4, should be the same a, in the radiation error. OK, so now what about breakage? I'm just going to consider one type of instability. And that's the possibility that you can break on monopoles. So just breakage, essentially. This can occur for a local U1 string, which has no long-range axionic forks. There's no detectable charge infinity. So naively, there's nothing that can stop such a process from happening. So if you think of this as some flux tube of some gauged U1 symmetry, so I have some magnetic field, say, in this thing. So this is my cosmic string, has tension mu. So this is dimension mass square. And so there's some flux tube in here, and then there's always probability. So this is a magnetic field. So if there exists a monopole, so this is the condition, if there exists a monopole, then you can just swing repair produce them. The same way if you have an electric field, you could, by tunneling, just pair produce an electron and a positron. Here I have a magnetic field in the tube, and I'm pair producing monopole and antimonopole. So that assumes that you have the monopole to break on, so that it's there in your spectrum. And if it's there in your spectrum, then that means you were wrong to think of your string as being stable. It's actually unstable. So I'll show, I won't be dealing with explicit models. The idea here is just want to be general. This was, like I said, motivated by work we did back with the string theory cosmic string, which can have this type of instability. But I just want to be general, and m is going to be a parameter, which I want to constrain, as mu will be a parameter. The tunneling rate is just given by this formula. And it just depends on the ratio m squared over mu, dimensionless ratio. This is going to be the parameter, essentially, that I want to construct. This is a tunneling rate per unit of time per unit of length. So it's dimension 2. OK? And so for example, where this showed up, originally, like it was proposed as a way to solve the monopole problem. So in gut theories, you break some gauge, non-abelian gauge group, say, to H cross U1, then you can produce monopole in this process, where the flux of this monopole is just unconfined. You have a nice monopole, which big flux. But then if later on you break the U1, then the U1 under which, so I'm assuming this monopole is charged under this U1. And when you break this U1, then you'll confine the flux and you get a string. And then you'll have a hybrid network of strings ending a monopole, and then quickly you expect the networks to disappear into gravitational waves. So this was studied before, and the idea there is that the network just disappears really quickly, and you're never going to see it. Yeah. So this is an instability, but just disappears extremely fast. Now, another possible scenario is that, let's say, you produce monopoles, then you have inflation, then the monopoles essentially are gone, then you produce the strings. Then they're still, in principle, unstable, but there's no primordial density of monopole, or rather, the density of primordial monopoles is really small, so the only instability here is just the tunneling. So therefore, with this kind of network, you expect it to be long-lived, particularly if the mass of the monopole is high enough, then the tunneling rate is going to be suppressed. And then you have a network which, if to all practical purposes, the strings are metastable, and they're going to survive. Okay, so even though there's a monopole in the spectrum, you still see a string. The lifetime is going to be determined by this ratio, square over mu. Right, and the lifetime is just 1 over square root of the gamma, my decay rate. So to give you an idea, for g mu of 10 to the minus 7, so g mu is my dimensionless parameter that I'm going to be. There's two parameters to important in this talk. This dimensionless parameter is the mass in terms of the tension, and g mu, which is the tension of the string, g is Newton's constant. So for g mu of 10 to the minus 7, then you need this parameter kappa to be greater than 84 for a t star, for the lifetime to be greater than the age of the universe today. So this is, for example, a mass which is 10 times the square root of mu. So for example, g mu 10 minus 7 means that mu is 10 to the minus 3 m Planck, square root of mu. And that would mean a mass which is about 10 to the 17 GeV or something. So it has to be slightly higher than what you would expect for the tension of the string. Okay? And as I said, this is where this is going to be slightly fine-tuned, obviously, because the decay rate is exponentially sensitive to this parameter. So if the mass is slightly lower, then the networks decay really quickly. If it's slightly higher, then it's long-lived, and there's not going to be any decay. Any questions? All right, so that's the basics. I just assume that we have a cosmic string network and it can just break. And there's a tunneling rate. And now, what kind of signal can we get? So I'm going to be mostly just consider vanilla cosmic strings. I want to consider the gravitational wave from this. So there, the monopole is not going to be charged under anything but GR, just gravity. And then I want to consider gravitational wave. And there's going to be two main things I'll look at. So gravitational wave first, which I'll show is that what's happening is if you have a really short step in time domain, then that means that in frequency domain, it's really long tail. Okay. And so you can these are great because you can hope to observe them at LIGO and LISA because it's just, there's a long tail in the frequency domain. And then if also I'll just be looking at the stochastic background, which is essentially all the bursts I haven't seen. Yes?
The monopole has a long-range charge, its magnetic field? Or?
Yeah, so the only charge I'm assuming the monopole has is the confined U1 that's in the string. It doesn't have any other U. It's not charged under ENM, for example. So it's not charged under any not confined, unbroken H group. So, is that answer your question?
That's a perfect answer.
Okay. Another question?
And the lifetime, when you say the lifetime is longer than the age of the universe, that's the time for nucleation for some unit length of string?
It's defined like this. So I just define it as one. So this is a decay rate per unit of time per unit of length. Uh-huh. Okay. So I just define the lifetime to just a ballpark figure as 1 over square root of that. So it's sorry, arbitrary definition, but that's a number that comes out in all
so
the
that, so that's roughly the time in which you would expect a monopole to nucleate on a Hubble length.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yes, and so I will be calculating the gravitational wave first, stochastic background, and we're mostly going to be pointing out to LIGO and advanced LIGO works, which are measuring at a frequency of 100 Hertz. All right, so there's probably been a lot of excitement about bursts from cosmic string coming from cusp and kinks. So this was there was quite a lot of excitement. So these cusps occurs whenever and just they occur in the normal life of the cosmic string loops. Just in the normal motion, periodically you'll generate these cusps. And in general, these will generate a burst because what's happening here, the derivative is infinite at this point. And there's, of course, there's some length scale over which that cusp is happening, and that determines the amplitude. But what's important is because this is a sharp event in real, in the time domain, in the frequency domain, it looks like has a long tail f of the fourth order. And the kinks, which occurs when the derivative is discontinuous, and they usually whenever you have some intercommutation, then these also generate burst with a long frequency tail, which goes like this. And the amplitude again depends on all the parameter in theory. But so these have been searched for. In fact, I think my next slide is a recent the LIGO collaboration released data from the S4 run. Whereas you did the match filters with the template that's 1 over 4 to minus, so this is the cusp. They searched specifically for the cusp solution. And that's using exactly the filter that gets only that. And this is one of their plot in their that from their paper. The P means that its probability of intercommutation is 1, so this is what you expect from vanilla cosmic string. So there's no string theory here. Epsilon is the size of the loop. It turns out that this is important for cusp because you need to determine how many cosmic string loops there is. And so it's determined epsilon is an appearance formula. This is the loop size at formation time t. And so, and as you can see, the bound, everything that's in the white spot is ruled out. Everything else is allowed. So the bound from LIGO right now on this is not very strong. In fact, BBM, which is rules out string BBN and the CMB rules out strings of G nu 10 to minus 6 for any epsilon. So they are bound right there. But this is the LIGO and the advanced LIGO, it's just to give you an idea. And this is like official search by LIGO. Alright. So now what is the system we're looking at? So it's a nice little, so I'm gonna take the approximation that's a straight string with two multiples. And so what's happening is this is just an unstable situation, just oscillate back and forth. Now, of course, you cannot really look at a the straight is really ideal. There's going to be some problems. For example, I mean, you could form a black hole when if these two guys are getting too close to each other inside the Schwarzschild radius and so forth. But really, in real life, you expect some impact parameter. And we discussed this in the paper, but in the talk, just for time, I'll just look at the ideal case. Okay? This was studied before by Martin and Vilenkin. They were just doing this for fun, but it was almost fun because they were considering the case I talked at the beginning, where you have primordial monopoles, so that was the gut scenario. In which case, then there was, you can calculate this, but they're clearly never going to be in a signal. We're interested in the case where there's no primordial monopoles, so that these guys live longer. Right, so just report what they did. You can solve the explicit equation of motion and the Nambu-Goto action, which you include together with boundaries for the monopoles. You can write down the stress energy tensor. And what's important is that it has this, so it's constant acceleration. The acceleration is just mu over m. So these guys are being constantly pulled. I mean, this is the perfect setup to construct a self-consistent system where the masses are uniformly accelerating. So it's a nice toy model. So the acceleration is constant. The as you can imagine, gamma naught and v naught, gamma naught is the maximum gamma factor of the monopole. So this is when they essentially meet. And v naught is the maximum velocity, which is going to be 1. Not sure why we keep it. And gamma naught is huge. Okay, you have this small monopole. Okay, this is almost an elementary particle that's being accelerated over cosmological distances by a string. So it's just that the gamma naughts given these kind of problems are really huge. They're very, very huge accelerations. And what's important is that it's constant acceleration up to the flyby, at which points it goes from positive, from acceleration to deceleration. So this is the absolute value here. So it goes from accelerating to decelerating. That's the sharp feature. That's what's giving us out. Well, yeah, that's the sharp feature, which is sort of the analog of the cusp in kinks. All right, so you can solve. Now, once you have, so this was, again, we didn't do this. This was Martin Vilenkin, which is just plug-in. You can solve the waveform. It's given in general. And so this is, you just need to Fourier transform the expression I had before. So when you Fourier transform, you get this expression. So it's a very nice problem because you can solve analytically everything. And you get the polarization tensor in the wave zone. Let's go fast here. The most important feature of this waveform in the frequency domain is what it looks like this. So it has plus polarization and no cross polarization. It's in the large frequency when n, so n is defined by f times l. So f is going to it's just the observed frequency, and l is the length of the string at rest. Yes, question.
Is this going to be very strongly beamed along the direction of the motion?
Yeah, very strong.
Okay, so you have
Yes, and here I haven't. So this is a statement. So it goes 1 over square root of FL. This is a very small deeming angle. So it's from you. And I haven't put any of the redshift factors. I'm doing the problem like in the air. I'll do the cosmology, and you have to put the 1 plus z everywhere.
I mean, what are the chances of the beaming at you?
Well, in our analysis, this is the same for the cusp and the kinks. It's a very small chances, but you have a lot of these things in the universe. And so when we do our plot, we just include this beaming fraction, and we live in it, and we still see something, although, of course, it's a huge effect that reduces the signal you see. But yeah, you have to include the fact that you're only going to see a very, very small fraction of all the bursts that are emitted in the universe. Right, so for a really large frequency, this thing goes like 1 over n squared, but for frequencies, so 1 over f squared, for frequencies in this range, it has this, the waveform goes like 1 over f. This is the strongest burst that has been proposed, as far as we know, as far as I know, for LIGO. This is stronger than the 4-third or the 5th-third. This is 1, the 3-third. And so this is what we're expecting. If you could see this, a burst of this form, 1 over f, you could just use a template, which is 1 over f, look for this, then that will be a very striking signal for LIGO. And it's really, this is all that matters almost, and maybe I can draw this. I have a graph of this, but the full waveform. Is essentially 0. Then this is the 1 over f, and then 1 over f squared. So this is for frequency 1 over L. So you don't see the smallest frequency is just 1 over the perimeter, essentially, so of the system. And then the biggest one is set by the gamma factor, which is huge, again, the maximum gamma factor over L. And then so it goes 1 over F, which will not be convergent if you were just capping the energetics, but then 1 over S squared beyond here, and essentially 0 to all practical purposes. I'm not quite sure what it looks like here. We're just putting it in our model. We just assume it was exactly 0. So, all right. And this has some interesting thing for the power spectrum, because if it's 1 over F, what it turns out is it gives you an exactly flat spectrum in the log interval. So you get as much energy per log interval of frequency. Get an exact flat spectrum. So if you sum, you can calculate just the power emitted for a given frequency, and it goes up 1 over N. And then when you sum all the power, you just get essentially, you sum 1 over N from there to there, and you just get log gamma out square. So you get 4 here, log times log square. So it's a very nice flat spectrum. This is going to show up when I present you the plot for the stochastic background. Yes, Christian?
I really would have expected that you wouldn't get waves of frequency higher than 1 over B, where 1 over the impact parameter B.
Yes, so the impact parameter will change, I think.
In other words, unlike a cusp or a kink where it literally occurs down to microphysical length scales, the idea that this two beads are actually passing each other at a distance.
Right. No, it's not important. The only thing that's important is it goes from acceleration to deceleration. So that you still, even if you're not, so it's not important that they're close to each other or not. So I think the impact parameter, and I should really check here, but I think it really only affects the low end, actually, not the high.
It goes from acceleration to deceleration, but the time it takes it is a flyby, it's B over C or something, right? It smooths out.
Yeah, so it does. Yeah, no, I think it will smooth out, but it's. Yeah. You still get the sharp, this A. Essentially, the only thing you need to get the feature or the burst is just the fact that it goes from positive to negative.
So the question is, why wouldn't they just circle around each other?
You can also do that. You can also do the solution of just a circular string, the rod. So there's two cases where you can solve exactly the straight one, and then the circular motion.
Which one is more realistic?
I think you should just, the more realistic is neither. It's the one with an impact parameter. But I think they both have exactly the same 1 over F power size.
They both have 1 over F, even the circular one?
What did they
have?
No, sorry. That's not correct. They have the same power radiated, I think, but not the same form, the waveform. But I should check that out. I'm not quite sure. But I think the real important one is the one with the impact parameter. The impact, so you just assume that there's some impact parameters. So this is the one we found is the most more realistic. Because if you have a string with a kink on it, or many kinks on it, you just let it go, and you assume that you have some string just randomly distributed. And we did some small simulation related. What happens is it just shrinks until the smallest sort of kinks on it, and then it goes back in some other direction. So this is the thing we found the most realistic. And it has the same rough feature. But, yeah. There's a lot to be done here in trying to go beyond the ideal situation. And so we just barely look at what happens if there are some kinks, what happens if there's some impact parameter, and roughly what we're getting, that the same broadest feature that you get dispersed. All right, so the thing we're going to be interested in is two things. The rate of burst in the stochastic background. And so quickly, the rate of burst, essentially, there's one burst per oscillation. Again, if there are kinks, it's not really true. But what's happening when there are kinks, because you get a burst anytime there's a kink. So another way to see that this is very general is that if there's a kink on the string, which there is all the time because these strings have have intersected many times, so there's always many, many kinks. And the when the monopole goes to a kink, it receives an acceleration. So if I have a string, and there's a kink on it. And there's always kinks coming from from an intercommunication. And these guys are moving at the speed of light. They're just there on the string, and there's many of them. So if I have a monopole here and a monopole here, when the monopole will meet the kink, it will essentially feel it's the same thing as a flyby here. It has a sharp change in its acceleration. And so you get a burst here. So what's happening is if you have many kinks is that your burst is going to be, instead of having, you get many bursts, but they all different, they're all between different frequencies, because this only includes wave wave between distances and for this distance. And then if you have another kink, you'll get another distance. So what you're doing is you're dividing your burst into many different bursts in different frequency range. But we found that this does not change the main feature, that at the end of the day, you're only going to see one of these bursts at some frequency. Right. So, sorry, maybe I'll just keep with the ideal situation, just in question of time. But you can include kinks, and we think that it doesn't change the main physics. So anyway, so in this case, if you have one burst oscillation, the rate of burst goes is just so that's the period is one over the length. The period is the length, and then so the quantity of interest, which now we want to compute, is the number density of segment of open string segment of length L at time t, and the length is the maximum length for t over v. So the number of bursts is ordered that, and the beaming fraction, which is related to the question we had before, is going to be 1 over the beaming angle. Now I've included all my cosmological factors and so forth. And then I just put some cuts on the frequency. And then the rate of bursts, the number of bursts per second per redshift per unit of length, is just going to be the product of all these, where I have some cosmological function that converts volume into redshift. Okay? And that's right. So this is going to depend also on what you take for your cosmology. We took lambda CDM in all our analysis. So then what we do is for the amplitude, we're going to search for it with a template of this type. And we can relate the amplitude to the length, because the amplitude, as you can see here, is just a function of the length of the string. So you can relate these two. And then you can, instead of writing dr dz dl, you write dr dz dA in terms of the amplitude. And then what we did is we just say, well, if this is the burst signal, what is the minimum amplitude we need to have in order for these experiments to detect it? So LIGO is just LIGO, and this is advanced LIGO. So this is the minimum amplitude. And so what we're doing when we calculate the rate of burst is we just integrate over all possible redshift, over all possible amplitude that we can detect. Every burst that has an amplitude below this one is going to be a part of our stochastic background. We're not going to be able to tell from the data it's burst. Right? Stochastic background is even simpler. We're literally, so because this burst is really just, this is the gravitational wave coming from the system, so we just integrate over all possible event times the strain square. And this is the gravitational stochastic background for unit frequency. Right, and like I said, it's scale invariant. This is go as 1 over f, so this is 1 over f square. And this is per log frequency. All right, and so the summary is the power is approximately independent of the length, the power is approximately independent of the mass, and the radiation is scale invariant in this range. And we have a 1 over f burst. Okay, so these are the big feature. All right, so the cosmologies, we want to determine what this function is. What is the number density of segment of length L at time t? So the basic idea here, and this was the problem which I originally thought would be really, really hard, and this is all due to my Benchler, my collaborator, did a really good job at estimating what this thing should be. So the idea is we have a network. You can think of the network as always having segment of string, but it's just at the beginning, the distance between the monopoles are superable. So for us, as far as we're concerned, they just look like infinite string. And then it's going to be some time, t stars, at which time the typical length of a segment becomes subhorizon, and the string then starts oscillating. Eventually, since it starts oscillating, it'll be so small that it won't interact anymore, and we expect that the scaling solution will disappear. Right? The scaling solution was because the string was interacting. imagine that if the segment of the string is so small, at some point it's going to behave like matter. It's going to be a small object. It's just like cosmic string loops eventually tend to behave like matter. So at some point, the scaling will be lost. And then there's going to be another time, t star star, at which point, you know, the system is just decaying into radiation and it'll just be all gone. Okay, so there's two time scale. And roughly, just there's a naive, which gives really pretty much the right answer, at least in the scaling era, of what this density should be. And let me see what. Yeah, I'll go. So imagine, so this is a nice little way of thinking about it, but we have done a much better analysis using the Boltzmann equation and all. But think of the whole network of cosmic string in the universe as one big world sheet. So this is all this string together. This is this distance x. This is time going this way. Now, on this big world sheet, there's a probability per unit of length, per unit of time, that you'll have a nucleation event. And then you can think of all these events as essentially Poisson distributed in this world sheet. It shouldn't be any correlation. So if you do that, then you assume that the probability of having k nucleation event in some area A is given by Poisson distribution. Okay, this is just a usual Poisson, except that gamma now, instead of being a lifetime, just one dimension, is dimension two. That's why this is area. So this is a Poisson distribution. And then what I want to know is, what is the probability that I found a string of length L at time t, this red one here? Well, that's the probability that there is one nucleation event and that whole area. This is the probability that I find this. So this is given by this. This is just put k equal to 1 here. So it's just one nucleation event. And then we use a trick that the number density here, I'm just writing it this way because I know that this is defined such that NL of t, when I integrate it, gives me the whole density of cosmic string of the whole network. So I can just, this is just an identity. If I put this back in my, you know, in my equation before, this is going to integrate this over all L. This gives me rho cs. And so then if I assume that I have scaling, I know what rho cs is. It's scaling like the dominant, say, radiation or something. It turns out it's just mu over t squared. Scaling like Hubble, essentially. And so if you put that in back in there, then you can solve from NL of t, and you get this exponential. So it's, you know, and this is just what you expect. There's an exponential, it's exponentially suppressed to have a long string at late time. Okay. And it goes to zero when gamma 2 goes to zero. That's because if there's the decay rate is zero, then you're just not going to have any segment. And the same way, if gamma 2 goes to infinity, then there's just no decay. All right. So you can do a real analysis of this, including loss and gain of length and the usual, solving the Boltzmann equation. And the thing that's really tricky is when you include this breakage analysis, the equation is actually an integral differential equation. So it's really messy. But fortunately, we knew what the answer was. So you have this complicated equation, and you plug the answer, and you find that it solved the equation. So this simple analysis worked out really well for us. And then it was easy to just include other effects, like include the fact that we expect deviation from scaling. And so this was included in some growth factor between the time of T star and T star star. And we were also gravitational decay was easy to include. So I think we have a fairly good, a lot better than probably one of, you know, than other parts of our analysis, but a fairly good handle on this function. And so then once we have this, we can just plug back in our rate and plug back in our stochastic background. And then we can just plot. So just go through the plots now. So this is for LIGO. So that means I've been using A minimum is 10 to the minus 21. And we're just looking at the full rate. And a rate, this 10 to minus 8 means I have one burst per year. So anything that's here would be less than one burst per year. So you're not going to, we assume that one burst per year is pretty much all we can wait for at LIGO. And then, you know, you see a lot more bursts here in this range. So this is the tension, and this is my parameter answer. And as you can see, it's pretty fine-tuned in the sense, so 84 was, like, these things are completely stable. And if you go, like, over to 1, you're just never going to see it decay right away. But there is a range which, if they were to search, they haven't, but if they were to search with this template 1 over f, they could exclude this. Right, and the BBN, so this is, the black line is extruded by BBN because this is just, so this is assuming that, just saying because you're forming loops and these loops are just producing gravitational waves, and this would be extruded by BBN already for this guy. Now there's a sharp kink here because this is just coming from loops, and if the mass square is smaller than this value, then all of the string decay before BBN, and therefore the previous analysis that was done by people does not work because we don't have strings at BBN. But then of course our line here comes in, so we're still getting gravitational waves, but they're not coming from loops. Okay, and then advanced LIGO, it doesn't look very different. You're just gaining one order of magnitude and the amplitude. And LISA, well, LISA looks very different, but I don't know what. And all the sharp features are coming from, because we had to deal, it turns out that most of the signal came from this range of masses. All the signal came from roughly a time of equivalence between matter and radiation. So we had to be a little, we had to do some numerical work a bit.
Different dashed line and the solid line?
So the solid line we're just plotting what is known already for BBN. So just saying you have a string network that has long strings and it's producing loops continuously. And then these decay to gravitational wave and then you just get a background from that. Now there's a sharp kink here because if the mass is lower than this range for G nu of 10 minus 6, then you don't have loops at BBN there.
So that's interesting. But what is it, the dashed line?
So the dashed line then is just essentially it's what I'm going to show you. It's the stochastic background that you get just from our string all decaying. And so here I'm just showing the rate of burst, but it's also a stochastic background. And so I'm just plugging it in here to show you that the stochastic background is still will allow you to use BBN constraint on the stochastic background to rule out particle parameters. So what's happening here is that if the networks all decay to gravitational wave, then you just have a stochastic background very early on. Then you have a stochastic background which you can constrain. And the constraint is very much the same as we have right now. In fact, it's just a little bit better because, as I mentioned, the networks does not scale exactly when it starts oscillating. Then it decays to gravitational wave. Well, there's a small period which it grows to behave like matter. And so it is actually a little bit more energy than you would expect. In fact, this is the thing that looks like. Yeah, right here. So the stochastic background, but first of all, as I said, it's very weak dependent on the mass. Essentially, it doesn't matter what the mass is. It doesn't matter. The mass just tells you when the network decays. So once it decays, it goes to gravitational wave, and then the background is there with you forever. So it doesn't really matter what the mass is. And this is BBN extruded. Again, this is what we are extruding. You were excluded from just the fact that your string would produce loops and exclude that, and this is what we are excluding from the end. And we are, as I said, excluding a little bit better because the network, because there was a non-scaling between T star and T star star, so the density grew a little bit compared to what you would expect, and that gives you a little bit more density. So let me wrap up. So it's a total, and this is just if you look at LIGO frequency. And again, initial LIGO is doing no better than BBN. This is exactly what I showed. This is the result they got in April. Just a month after we published it. But they were looking at a different thing. But we're agreeing with what they're saying here, that LIGO, the sensitivity is not doing any better than BBN. But advanced LIGO is supposed to do better. And because it's k-invariant, what's nice is this could be done at any frequency. This is essentially the same power at any frequency, so you could go with pulsar timing and do exactly the same. All right, so to conclude, so BBN constraint give a model-independent constraint routine on cosmic string, whether they're metastable or stable. That doesn't matter, because BBN is just sensitive to all the gravitational waves. So you're metastable. You decay all the matter, you still get this constraint. It's slightly different maybe because of this fact that if you're metastable, there might be a slight regime of non-scaling. And so that might change a little bit, but otherwise, it's pretty much doesn't matter whether you're stable or metastable. But now, depending on your range of parameter, and roughly you need to be more even like 50 to 70, maybe I'm a bit large here. But for a certain range of parameter, this kappa, then you can get some new signals that you would never get with stable strings. And particularly, you can get you can observe a stochastic background for this range of masses with advanced LIGO, which we could rule out string with tension greater than 10 minus 11. And in the smaller, again, this is somewhat fine-tuned, but in the smaller mass range, then you will get a burst signal, which will be detectable, and then you can tune, you can constrain the masses you need. And it's just a very nice, so it's somewhat contrived that you would be in this, first that your string would be metastable, and then you would be in this mass range. But the signal is very nice. Again, it's a 1 over F, so it's something that's not been looked for. Let me now go into this. The other type of instability, I have nothing to say about. And the other type of instability is the possibility that the string decays on the domain wall, or rather, you have a string that works, and this will occur for global string, where you would have a global U1 string, and then the U1 symmetry, that global U1 would be broken down to a discrete subgroup. Then there will be domain walls, and the string will be the boundary of the domain wall. This is sort of the complete analog of a string ending on a monopole, but now you have a domain wall ending on a string. And that also, we expect that the whole network will decay. But dynamics there are unknown, and whether there is some nice signal that would come out of this decay. This is very much in the spirit of any phase getting gravitational waves from phase transition. And then we can analyze. And so just conclude, finish that. Essentially, again, we have these two bursts, and now we're just putting the 1 of F there. We have 3/3, 4/3, and 5/3. But this one, these are really there all the time. This one really requires you to have some kind of instability. Yeah, thank you.
So I just wanted to make it, well, I guess bring up what I mentioned before, that this really depends on what kind of orbits you assume. So if you assume very eccentric orbits, you're basically linear shrinking of a string, then that's true. But for example, for binary black holes, you expect that when they merge, their orbits are circularized.
Yeah.
So same thing could happen here.
Oh, eventually, probably, yes. Eventually, you will just start.
But for observing with LIGO, that's the stage that you probably care about, because you want the distance to be small enough for the wavelength to be.
So yeah, we thought about this. So what we could do is you say, well, there's like number of, you get one burst of your station, but eventually it gets so small that this idea of having a long string coming into a small impact parameter is not good anymore. You should just consider it as big, and then you should just cut off. And you can do that. And again, these are all order of magnitude estimate, right? If you include that, then you're just changing a little bit where the endpoint is and the graph.
But the question is it a little bit or not?
Well, we looked at it and it didn't seem like it would be such a big effect. So we try even more drastic cuts than this. We try, like, the more drastic we did is we say every segment will only give us one burst. And then that's done. Then it decays. That would be the case if, for example, you expect that very quickly you form black holes or something. So we try just that every segment gives you only one burst. The point is you have so many segments, because you're decaying, you just get exponentially small. You have a lot of very small segments. So even if you assume just one burst per segment, we're still getting a segment. So we try many different cuts, but I mean, this is in nowhere analyzed to a degree that I will, you know, be fully sure of the plots I'm giving. I think it's more of an order of magnitude, but I think we found that it could be there.
Well, maybe one. So I guess I would have thought that if they initially started at a order of Hubble distance from one another, that their initial pass, their impact parameter would be order Hubble.
Yeah.
And that'll release some amount of energy, and then the next impact parameter will be smaller and smaller. And I wonder, can you guys estimate sort of how many passes you would have to get for the impact parameter would get to be,
I think, again, it's the impact parameter did not. I mean, you can, at the end of the day, what convinced me of this, and I had the same kind of questions, what convinced me of this is you can forget a bit about the impact parameter. You can just think of the kink.
I think it must be
So the impact parameter, you can take it to be a fraction of bubble, and I'll claim you still have this. Because a kink is enough to give you the sharp position. And the model is going to encounter many kinks. And so what's happening is you just get, every time you hit a kink, so you emit a gravitational wave burst with a 1 over f every time, because it doesn't matter whether your acceleration is changing by 180 degrees. You know, it's just, if it's a kink, you accelerate, your monopole changes suddenly, and it's relatively, so you have a monopole. The physics is very simple. You have a monopole, it's uniformly accelerated, and every time its acceleration has an abrupt change of direction, come from a kink or from cusp or forcing kink, then you will get a burst. That's essentially it. And so the impact, the flyby itself is not, it's not really particular. I think it's going to be. And what it does to kinks is that, well, you said, no, you're not going to get the full frequency range because you're only being accelerated for a fraction of the length. But the idea is you go on, and so you get different, you get multiple bursts and different frequencies and different frequency range. And you only see one, so it doesn't matter if it was many bursts. So I think it's the, but yeah, we took the impact parameter to be a fraction of the length of the thing, so it's a fraction of all. It has to be. Otherwise, if D is like greater than, if the impact parameter is smaller than 10 to the G mu L, the length of the string, then you will form a black hole. You can show that there will be an instructional radius. So it has to be a order of one, the higher length of the hole. So we took that.
Okay, well, that, so I think that's it for the end of the workshop.